Playback TV this Friday. We have the Chicago Bulls at home as they host the Milwaukee Bucks. So be sure to tune in. The Bucks are a team who are still trying to establish themselves as true contenders in the NBA under head coach Doc Rivers. So this game against Chicago could be another stepping stone as far as them moving in the right direction. Then as far as Chicago, they are a team that are one of the more bottom teams in the Eastern Conference. But let's see if they can pull an upset against one of the NBA's best. So be sure to tune in. I will talk about everything revolving the game itself as well as other things revolving basketball as a whole. So be sure to tune in. I will leave the link in the description. Now, without further ado, let's dive into the episode. This is another edition of For the Love of the Game. This is your one and only Nick Andre. Appreciate you guys tuning in. And this is a very special time of the year, especially for me and other hoop heads. We are coming down to the wire of college season on both men's and women's side. And conference play is underway. And the NCAA tournament is right around the corner. Last week, we covered the men's side of things. This week, we got to definitely dive into some women's. And I got a very special guest with me, man. One of my personal favorite analyst writers, man. I got my guy Zach. What's going on with you, bro? Happy to have you on.
Man, kind words, man. Kind words, man. No pressure at all. Sheesh. But nah. I appreciate you for having me, man. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you for having me, man. Nah, no doubt. No doubt about it, man. Like, so let me ask you, man, how excited are you, man, about March Madness coming into play?
Man, I'm extremely excited. The pool for women's play is just, well, one, you know, you can never expect you can never have any expectations coming into March Madness. The pool for like how deep the actual bracket is gonna go this year is crazy, it's tremendous. And there's not that there's ever like a clear cut winner, but like there's no favorites. You don't know where it can end up this year, and that's kind of exciting.
I think that's the beauty of March Madness, man, is that you got to bring your best on every single matchup. Like, it's different from the pros, like, especially NBA, like, where you have a 7-game series. Like, no, you got to lock in, especially, like, that entire game if you do want to advance in. If you get caught slipping, you know, you could be a 1 seed going up against a number 6, 7, 8 seed. Mm-hmm. If you get caught slipping, like, you know, maybe, like, those final moments, you might lose momentum, and then, you know, next thing you know, you're out of the tournament. So that's the beauty of March Madness, man, is that, you know, there's never really a clear-cut favorite. Obviously, you know, you are going to have favorites, as you've seen a lot of teams, you know, like really dominate throughout the season. But it just takes that one particular moment that can change everything, man. So let me ask you this. Do you have a certain favorite team in college or whatever, or do you just cover everybody?
It's because, man, I'm not going to lie. I cover everybody. I've always kind of had like a close watchful eye for Duke.
We're definitely diving into them.
Absolutely. And Kara Lawson, she's from the DMV, from Virginia. So, you know, you always got to support. But as of late, I've kind of been hovering back and just watching everything. But if I have to pick that one, I kind of hover over Duke.
Okay. Yeah. ACC, I like that, man. You know, I've been locked in on Florida State, man. So, yeah, man, that's a little connection that we got, man, for sure, man.
For sure. But,
man, let's dive into it, man. Let's dive into the first topic. I know that I'm a little late on discussing this because this moment happened a few weeks ago, but Caitlin Clark has now became the number one leading scorer in women's college basketball history. So let me ask you this. Where were you when that moment happened? Were you actually watching the game? And whenever you found out, you know, what were your initial thoughts?
I believe, I'm not going to lie, I think I was at a pub or somewhere, you know, sipping on the good old brew. And they didn't have the game on, which made me very mad. But, you know, it happens. When I saw it, I wasn't surprised. It was just funny because I'm thinking 2-3 days earlier, she didn't hit it. She didn't break the record, and Kelsey Plum had already tweeted out like, "Congratulations!"
Yeah,
she didn't hit it yet. But no, I was out and about when it happened, but I was not surprised. Definitely a tremendous, monumental career and achievement. That's a lot of scoring to do, and she's still pushing the record further. So I don't think we'll see that record broken in a long time. But yeah.
Yeah, it's going to take a long time. I mean, I know it took her because Kelsey Plum did it in 2017, I want to say. Yeah, 2017. Mm-hmm. So it took about 7 years to actually break that record, or a little less than 7 years. But just going back to watching that game, I didn't actually watch it live. I ended up watching the game the next day, and she came out the gates firing, man. Like, you know, because it was weird because I was thinking, like, you know what, like, maybe she might. I mean, coming into the game, she was only 8 points away from actually breaking the record. So I didn't expect her to get it done within like less than 2 minutes or even exactly 2 minutes into the game. But she just came in with a clear mindset of obviously looking to win the game, but also looking to break that record. So it was clear as day that it was on her mind early in the contest. And who knows? I mean, maybe she just wanted to get it over with just because of the fact that, you know, all the nervousness and everything, you know, as far as, you know, all the pressure breaking the record. So just to be able to get it out of the way and then top it off with 49 for the game was just incredible. 49. Like, I'll be real. Like, Caitlin Clark, she's amazing. Absolutely. I've been grateful to just be able to witness her greatest throughout all 4 years. I know that, you know, there's a lot of new fans that are kind of catching on, especially last year in the tournament. Mm-hmm. But if you've been watching her even throughout high school and even throughout her 4 years in college, you know, this is something that she's been doing since the beginning. And she's only gotten better, you know, every single season, man. So let me ask you, because I know that there's been a lot of discourse, you know, a lot as far as Caitlin Clark possibly being the GOAT of women's college basketball. Are you one of those that believe that? And if you don't, like, who do you believe is? Go ahead. You're good.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, too, like, if you don't believe it, I was going to ask you, like, who do you believe is? But if you don't believe it, why do you believe that she's not the GOAT? Like, elaborate.
Okay. I just want to provide a disclaimer. Like, Caitlin Clark has been phenomenal. And again, like we said, I think she's at 3,617 points right now, which again, that I don't think that record will be broken in a long time. And then she is a transcendent talent. I don't think we're going to see it. She's definitely going to have success at the next level. I think she's the best scorer that we've ever seen at the women's basketball game, but I can't say the GOAT of college women's basketball. And I simply say that because one, you can make the argument that she is, but for me, I can't overlook what Maya Moore did, her record at UConn, two national championships. And then even still, I have to put Breonna Stewart at number one. She won four championships consecutively, if I'm not mistaken. And she averaged double digits every single season. Now, again, Caitlin Clark scoring probably the greatest scorer, but I'm talking about overall front-to-back player. I'm giving it to Breonna Stewart. Four championships. You actually contributed to those championships. Even your freshman year, you may have not been the focal point of that offense during your freshman year, but then you come back your sophomore year, your junior year, your senior year. Again, fact check, but I do believe Breonna Stewart won four titles. So I can't, it's hard for me to give it. And that's not to say a title makes or breaks you, but we can't go to other sports when we go over to their counterparts and say, oh, if you don't have a championship, that kind of critiques your career and then not do the same in return. So for me, I got to give it to Breonna Stewart.
Right. And, you know, you make a good point as far as the championship aspect, because I mean, yeah, obviously I agree with you. You know, nobody can argue that Caitlin Clark's definitely one of the best scorers in college basketball history, if not the greatest scorer. You know, like just her skill set, you know, I mean, not even just the deep 3-point shooting, but just the ability to get into the lane, the ability to draw fouls and everything. You know, she's a really complete player on the offensive end. And, you know, I wish people would really, like, really dissect, you know, how good she is and how she's able to get her buckets. But as far as her being the GOAT, I can't necessarily go that far. You know, I've tweeted this, like, over 100 times already over the last, like, 2 to 3 weeks. But I'll be real. I mean, like, even if she's not the GOAT, I don't think it's a knock on her in her career. You know, I just think, you know, like, it's like you mentioned Maya Moore and what she was able to do at UConn. Same thing with Breonna Stewart and what she was able to do in all 4 years. Winning four championships is not easy. Like, that's not an easy thing, especially when you're going up against everybody in the country. So now you got to go through March Madness, like, each and every time and still find a way to come out on top. Like, that's incredible. And we can even go further back. You know, we can talk about the Cheryl Millers. We can talk about the Lisa Leslies or Cheryl Swoops or Diana Taurasi, Cynthia Cooper. Like, you know, the list just goes on and on and on. And, you know, and, like, I mean, and I'll be honest.
Candace Parker.
Candace Parker as well at Tennessee. You can't knock what she did at Tennessee. So, I mean, the list just goes on and on. And even, I mean, I'll be real. I mean, I'm pretty biased here. I would love what Sylvia Fowles is able to do at LSU as well.
Absolutely. So, I got one for you, too.
Arika Ogunbowale. Oh, yeah. Notre Dame? Yes. Hell, you want to go there? Skylar Diggins-Smith, too. And what she was able to do at Notre Dame. I mean, we can go there, man. You know, like, there's a lot of great players. And like I said, you know, I think Kayla Clark is definitely in that conversation as well.
Absolutely.
But I think the way that we weigh greatness, and it's like, you know, you can have a lot of accomplishments, but if you don't find a way to get that championship, it's kind of hard for me to really consider you the GOAT. It's like, for instance, like, it's like the NBA. Like, a lot of people, they view Michael Jordan as the GOAT, or they may view LeBron James as the GOAT. Though both of those guys have multiple championships. So, I mean, that. So, I mean, you definitely have to weigh in winning as far as that aspect, because at the end of the day, that's the ultimate goal. But, no, I mean, you know, as far as Caitlin Clark, I mean, even if I don't view her the GOAT, view her as the GOAT, I don't discredit anything that she's done. I've been on record saying she's the face right now of college basketball, and I don't think anybody comes close. I know that we have a lot of great players like Cameron Brink. We have Paige Beckers. We have even Juju Watkins, who was on the rise, and, you know, Hannah Hidalgo was on the rise.
I will say this.
Go ahead.
Not because I went to Morgan State in Baltimore, Maryland, but if I – okay, so obviously Caitlin Clark, again, amazing, phenomenal scorer. But I will say in the same breath, I can't leave out Angel Reese, because in the head-to-head matchup, they have been talking trash.
Go ahead.
Back it up.
Again, go ahead.
I'm not talking about skill set, but I'm just talking about as far as like trailblazing for women's sports and women's college basketball, you got to throw Angel Reese. I would throw Angel Reese in there as well, too.
Now, again, honestly, you know what's crazy? You just reminded me of something, too. Honestly, and people are probably going to get mad at me for saying this whenever they listen, but I might have Aaliyah Boston ahead of Caitlin Clark right now.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, when you talk about – well, I mean, obviously Aaliyah Boston's not – you know, one of the top scorers in NCAA history. But when you talk about what she was able to provide to South Carolina, she went to multiple Final Fours. She got a national championship in 2022. I know that Caitlin Clark knocked her out last year to be able to get to the to the national championship. But what Aaliyah Boston was able to do at South Carolina, and Asia Wilson as well. Asia Wilson, we can go back even that further as well. So, yeah. I feel like whenever we discuss like the greatest players or player in college basketball history, we have to look at all the greatness as a whole throughout so many decades, and even like a half century however far you want to go. So, like I said, you know, Kayla's great. You know, Kayla's great. And also, I'm glad you mentioned Angel Reese, because I'm a big Angel Reese fan. And like, especially once she transferred over to LSU, and just how she's just been able to dominate. You know, I want to say she broke the record for most double doubles last season with the program. Mm-hmm. And then she's just been able to capitalize off of it even this year. So, yeah, Angel Reese definitely has to be up there as far as, you know, having that respect. But, no, I mean, like I said, you know, Caitlin Clark is a tremendous all-around player as a whole.
And think about all the starters that Angel Reese lost from the last year's championship, whether they were kicked off the team due to detrimental conduct or left the program or graduated.
Exactly. And she basically has a whole new team, I mean, besides Flage, for the most
part.
Pretty
much everybody's new.
Mikayla Williams.
Three new starters.
Exactly. Haley Van Liv, Anissa Morrow. I mean, look, they're all playing pretty good basketball. You know, I can't knock, you know, what they've been able to do. But, you know, you talk about – and I mean, you talk about who Caitlin Clark has. And, I mean, I know people always try to discredit, you know, the talent that Caitlin Clark has. And I get it. But you can't ignore, like, you know, what Caitlin Clark's teammates are just able to provide. You know, I mean, they all play, you know, such a huge role on that team. And, you know, like,
right.
And I mean, it's part of the reason why she has been great, is because of, you know, the sacrifice of her teammates and her teammates allowing her to shine as well. So
that's just absolutely. Molly Davis, Kate Martin, Hannah. Absolutely. Like, her team, like, I will say with Caitlin Clark, which is so amazing to watch. A few key cogs of last year's team were not on the team. And granted, they were lethal last year because you were able to have more spacing on the floor. But this year, I don't see – it's a lot of breakdown. The offense breaks down and Caitlin Clark comes to save the day versus the team as a whole last year didn't panic when things were sinking. So Andrea Carter from ESPN, she had said it, and I'm glad she said it. If you're looking at Iowa right now, I'm not scared of them like I was last year. But like you said – they have a chance if they have Caitlin Clark on the floor. But sometimes their team has, like, multiple X factors that they have to consider every game. So will somebody show up? Will somebody not show up come tournament time? And will that affect them? Last year, they kind of got away with some dead spurt moments in the postseason. But can you afford to get away with it this time?
That's a fact. So let me ask you this, you know, since we're already on the spot. So do you see Iowa potentially getting back to the national championship? I mean, obviously, we did mention that, you know, obviously with Caitlin Clark, you're going to have that. You can never count them out with Caitlin Clark. But Like, do you from your personal opinion, do you see them getting back to the national championship?
No, I don't. I wouldn't be surprised if they got there. I don't know if these two things can be true. So hopefully these can. I don't see them getting back to the national championship, but I wouldn't be surprised. But there's just so many sleepers. I have one of my teams. I know we're probably going to talk about it later. Colorado. You have to watch out for Colorado. They are physical, up close, in person, in your face. Jalen Sherrod, Kendall Weta, Kay Miller. They're just – it's just something. They have, like, a smooth, old-school game, and it's just like – of course, you knock off LSU first game. I mean, you knock off LSU game one. Yeah, LSU have a lot of internal things going on, absolutely, but
right.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's your responsibility to come ready on the floor. It's your responsibility. Kim Mulkey should have had them ready, but Colorado's coach, J.R. Payne, has had them ready all game, and they just – they want to get better, and you see that hunger, you see that determination, and I don't know if you see that dog in any other team right now. Like, I'm telling you, Colorado is someone that can catch anybody slipping, but sorry, I went on a whole tangent, but to get back to your question, I don't know if we'll see – appreciate it. I don't know if we'll see Iowa back, and I don't foresee it.
I mean, I'm honestly glad that you mentioned Colorado, because all season I've been saying they can make the Final Four. I mean, you like, you know, it's everything that you mentioned. You know, they're very physical on defense. You know, they have a dog mentality. They don't mind, you know, making sacrifices. You know, Jalen Sherrod has just been incredible all year.
Mm-hmm.
And she really took the spotlight in that first game against LSU, and she's just been able to capitalize it ever since. You know, I know that the Pac-12 has been a really tough conference to play in, but for Colorado to continue to just be able to sustain themselves and just continue to be true contenders in a conference has been just incredible. Let's go ahead and transition into that, man. You know, that's a perfect transition into the Pac-12, man. So, like I mentioned, in my opinion, like, you have the SEC, you have the ACC, in my opinion, and then you have the Pac-12. In my opinion, those are the three best conferences. I know that people could say Big Ten as well. Big Ten has been incredible with Iowa, then Indiana, the Big East, too. I mean, obviously, you know, UConn's been running away with the Big East. But the Pac-12 has definitely been one of the more competitive conferences as a whole. So what are your thoughts on this conference, and who do you see as the number one team right now in that conference?
Ooh, the Pac-12, that they've been revived this year. I'm not saying that they weren't here and there last year. Obviously, you have Stanford. They're always going to be in the hunt.
Right.
I feel like Stanford's kind of been on the edge the last few years. It's like, obviously, you're going to take them seriously because you know they're going to be there, but I think they lost that oomph. But I think it's going to come down to Colorado or USC. Those are the two that I'm watching out. And I hate to say it, Juju Watkins, I mean, obviously they're a full team, but what is it, 11 straight 30-point games? You broke Cheryl Miller's record. Her game is just so smooth, and she does not force anything. She'll catch you with an in and out, a hezzy. She can pull up on the dime from the top of the key, from the mid-key. She can get to the bucket. Every time I see USC, I just think of Loving Basketball, but that's neither here nor there. But, like, they're just –
that's a good one.
They're just well-constructed. I mean, granted, you can – I'm not saying they're going to win it all, but Pac-12, you got Caitlin Davis, who's a dog. You got Taylor, Big B. Like, you have so many weapons that you can have, and it's like their environment nurtures Juju. Like, it's not like she goes out of her way to try to, like, force all of her scoring. They just feed off of one another. And then, you know, if all things go to fail, they'll just give her the ball and get out the way, and that's okay. But then also, I'm going to go back to Colorado. That's my sleeper for the Pac-12. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but they just have it from the front court to the back court. They can match up with just about anybody, and they don't make the same mistake too many times often. I just Colorado's lethal, but I would say Colorado or USC. I like what I've seen out of both.
To me, it's really hard to pinpoint who I believe is the best. Mm-hmm. It fluctuates, you know. It really fluctuates. I mean, you know, you make good points about Stanford. You know, they're always going to be in contention. Cameron Brink is just an incredible talent.
Yes,
give credit to Kiki Iriafa. You know, she's been able to take her game to another level as well.
Yep.
USC, of course, you know, with Juju leading the way. Juju, I'll be honest, man. Juju is so fun to watch, man.
Yes.
Just her ability to be in full control of the game and just play her style and play at her own pace. You know, she's never too much in a rush. She never plays too slowed down. You know, she plays at her pace and she has full control of the contest. She can score from anywhere on the court. You know, she's a great passer. She's a great rebounder as well. I know that there's been games this year where she has shot inefficient, because there was even a game against Oregon State about a week ago where she shot 6 of 32. Either way it is, you know, you still got to put the ball in Juju Watkins' hands. I mean, hell, she dropped 51. She dropped 51 against Stanford. Like, 51 out of 67 points. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy to even think about that type of performance. And she was able to do it as a freshman. She's only 18, I want to say. So she still has so many more years to grow.
Yeah, right. And then because of the WNBA, the CBA, you either got to be 22, mm-hmm. you have to graduate, or you have to be outside of high school for 4 years, which is still 22. But
right.
So, like, she has time, and it's just, like, the one thing that was really – Stanford has always been disciplined on the defensive side of the ball. And I'm not saying, like, they weren't playing defense. It's just she was that great. Better – unfortunately, great defense, better offense. Like, in some situations – there were some laps from Stanford, but that's something you normally don't see, especially when they always have a solid front court. So, like you said, that's the one person – Herbert. It's ironic. Colorado football and Juju Watkins, those are the only two things that can make me stay up West Coast or Midwest.
Now, I get that 100%, man. How do you feel about UCLA? Because at one point, you know, it was them and it was South Carolina, two of the two undefeated teams, and they were clearly, you know, at the top of the Pac-12. And then you kind of see them, you know, kind of like go down in the standings. So how do you feel about UCLA and their chances this year?
UCLA is a very interesting kind of phenomenon. I think, you know, behind Lauren Betts, I think, and her being a sophomore, I think they have a chance. It's just with them, you never get a, I don't want to say like that, but like you said, they got off to a hot start. Can't talk. They got off to a hot start, but then they kind of start, they'll play down to their competition in a sense. And it's like, you know, their expectations and their ceilings, but sometimes they play down to their competition. I think they're fizzling at the wrong time. And I think that's kind of what scares me when it comes to them, because they are somebody at the beginning. I'm singing praise like, oh my gosh, they can do that. I mean, granted, they're on a 3-game win streak right now, but you have to capitalize on those games. Like, you know, those aha games, we probably should have had those moments, but I think they're definitely in the conversation. Any of the three could win the Pac-12. It's just, again, who's peaking at the right time, so to speak. I mean, right now they're on a 3-game win streak, but there are some games that I think that they wish they could have had back.
I agree. Probably one game that I could say is probably that Oregon State game when they lost at the
buzzer. Absolutely.
That's definitely a game that they probably wish that they could have had a do-over and try to win that game again. I mean, even though it was down to the last possession, but – you know, that was definitely still a big loss. Yeah, exactly. But I like UCLA. I like this team a lot. They definitely haven't been as dominant as they might have been, like, you know, especially like a non-conference play and even at the beginning of Pac-12 play. But that just shows how good the conference is. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. So it's really just like a battle every single night. And Lauren Betts is still a tough cover to me. And I know there was, I want to say she had missed like a little bit of time as well. About maybe she like did. A month ago or two ago. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. You know, but Lauren Betts is still a very tough cover for any defensive player. I'm still a big fan of Kiki Rice. I'm a huge fan of Charisma Osborne, like her defense and what she's able to provide. London Jones as well. So I mean this is a team that I'm not ever going to knock out just because I feel like they have such great star power, but then they also have a really good supporting cast as well. We mentioned USC. We mentioned Colorado. Let's talk about Oregon State. You know, how you been feeling about them? Because they've been a team that's really shocked me. I knew that they would come into the season like being really good and being in that contention as far as in the Pac-12, but I guess I didn't expect them to be this good. Like, you know, especially like a top 25 team.
Yeah, I think Oregon State. Listen, you can never discount a Beaver or the Beaver, so to speak, Reagan right. Beavers. They're a very gritty team. I think that's somebody that you have to watch out for. I'm not saying Final Four or anything like that, but don't be surprised if they get to the Elite Eight. They have a very solid – they go so deep into their bench that, you know, you never know who can catch the hot hand. They have solid depth. I think they're not afraid of the moment, so to speak.
No,
and they get out on the break, and they're very physical. That's a team that I agree with you. That's a team I'm very confident in. I'm very high on them. I got them going to the Elite Eight, so to speak.
That's not bad. That's not bad at all.
Now, if I'm wrong, don't judge me. But
I mean, it's March Madness, man. I mean, we can always make that prediction. I can see Elite Eight. I can definitely see Elite Eight. I can also see Sweet 16 as well. But either way, I got the team coming out of the first round. I don't think that they would definitely get upset by any team, you know, in the first or second round. This team is super great defensively. You know, you mentioned a player, a great sensational player like Reagan Beers, and what she's just been able to provide on the floor. And like I said, you know, I think it really surprised me to see how good they've been because, and maybe this is just me not paying much attention to them, but to see where they've been and just to see them just being able to really keep themselves afloat in the Pac-12 and, you know, just being contenders has been really amazing. So I'm really happy for them. I will tell you this, one team that I've been really disappointed in the Pac-12 has been Utah. And I just feel like for them, and I know they ended up losing Gianna Neepkins to injury in December. So that's definitely a big loss. But one thing that I could say is that I feel like they've been very underwhelming. Like even like this past week, they got blown out by UCLA. And even though Elisa Peely has been incredible, I just feel like, I don't know. I just feel like I'm not really as high on Utah as I might've been at the beginning of the year.
I feel like this is going to be kind of really awkward for me to say, but I feel like they're right where they are. I agree with you. I didn't really care for the blowout for UCLA. I didn't really care for that blowout. However, they've shown me that they can beat the top competition, but then they can also lose to the lower of the competition. Right. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. They can ball out with just about anybody. Elisa Peely, amazing baller. Like, she just gives you that open, I'm going into the open gym, I'm dropping 60 on you. I mean, granted, the 60 hasn't happened, but they can compete with anybody. But they are underwhelming at times, but again, when you start March Madness, you're basically restarting. It's a different story, and now you've gotten to see the playing field, and you make those adjustments. Now, whether they make those adjustments or not, then we'll probably have to have that conversation. Like, okay, this was a letdown by Utah, but I feel like right now they're where they need to be. I'm not too high. I'm not too low on them right now.
I can understand that. I can definitely understand that. Elisa Peely is just amazing. She's another top-tier talent. You know, when you talk about just being able to be a great three-level scorer, space the floor, and knock down three-point shots, but also the great footwork and the great mobility that she has at her size is just really incredible as well. You know, I'm thinking back at when they played against South Carolina, she dropped 37 and just being like a one-person show in that matchup. I mean, I know they ended up losing the game, but, you know, she was doing literally everything to keep her team afloat and in the game, so Elisa Peely is definitely one of the best players in the conference. And, you know, she's definitely somebody that people need to continue to watch on a night-to-night basis just because of what she provides offensively. Before we move on, I'm sure this is going to be an easy answer for you. Who do you have winning conference player of the year? I mean, at least I'll say it's easy for me. I mean, who is it for you?
Who are you going with first?
I'm going with Juju, easily.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to get some suspense, but yeah, it's kind of hard not to go with Juju.
Come on. And I mean, it's not a knock to anybody else. I mean, you're in the same conference as Cameron Brink. You're in the same conference as, I mentioned, Elisa Peely. We mentioned Kiki Rice, Lauren Betts. So, I mean, you're in a conference with a lot of great players, but Juju has just been a standout. Obviously freshman of the year, that's going to go to her regardless. And then also player of the year, as far as in the Pac-12, I think it just has to go to her. I mean, she's been incredible. Really putting the team on her back, putting USC on her back.
And it's not making them relevant again. Let's talk about making them relevant.
I definitely agree. And I mean, it's not a knock to anybody else because, you know, they have a really great supporting cast. You know, Mackenzie Forbes is a great all-around player.
Absolutely.
Rhea Marshall is great, you know, under the basket, you know, as far as defensively. Kayla Padilla, she's been really incredible, you know, like running the point guard for them. So, you know, they have a really incredible team, but, like, Juju just makes that team go. Like, you can't deny that whatsoever. It's like you mentioned, you know, really just making them relevant again and making them a contender. Because, I mean, even last year, you know, like a few years in the past, you know, they were decent, but they weren't really, like, known as one of the best teams in the country, even in the Pac-12. So now you have a player like Juju Watkins now there who's just rejuvenated that entire program to where they are. It's just been incredible.
And I don't think people realize – the way that Juju's performing, that's the way she's performing and the way that she's brought the spotlight to USC again, that is going to help their draft classes moving forward. Like Facts. That is going to, I mean, their recruiting.
Recruiting that's class, yeah.
That's going to help their recruiting classes tremendously, because now they're going to be like, well, I'm not, for those who, you know, California is a great state for basketball. People aren't going to want to leave. And then you're going to have people that are like, okay, I'm going to go to the West Coast. I'm not going to go to the traditional UConn. I'm not going to go to the traditional Stanford. I'm not going to, you know, I love my Dawn Staley. I'm not going to look at South Carolina first. Maybe I need to look this way now. So I think, and then that can go for the whole Pac-12 as a whole.
I agree. I definitely agree.
SeatGeek is a proud sponsor for the love of the game. There are several events getting ready to take place that you don't want to miss. Ticket prices could be a little abnormal. However, if you use code LOVEOFTGBBALL, you can save $20 off your first purchase and be in store for a great night. Again, that's LOVEOFTGBBALL. The code will be at the bottom of the description of this episode, and make sure to support the show by using it. Now, let's get back into the episode.
Let's transition back to the ACC. I got to talk about your team, which is the Blue Bloods, the Duke Blue Devils. And I read one of your pieces earlier where you're talking about a lot of sleeper teams. You had Kansas State in there, and then you also have the Duke Blue Devils. And I'll be honest, man, I think it's crazy to think that this team is not ranked. Like, this team is exceptional on both ends of the floor. I actually went back and I watched the NC State game today. Man, defensively, they were going crazy. And yes. I mean, they've been really good all year. You know, they've kept themselves afloat in the ACC. I mean, I mentioned they beat NC State on Sunday. They beat Syracuse, I want to believe, on Thursday. They blew out Florida State by like 42. And then they had some other big wins as well. They went toe-to-toe against Virginia Tech as well about a few weeks back. This team is just sensational all around. Ashlyn Jackson, Reagan Richardson, elite wing duo. I've been a fan of no, go ahead, you're good.
No, you're good. No, man, I'm getting excited. Go ahead. I mean,
what I was gonna say was Tyana Mayer, I feel like she's been the perfect point guard for this team. Yes. She's really improved as an outside scorer, because even I was watching the last year at Boston College, she really struggled to shoot from the perimeter, but she's really gotten a lot better there. I love Jaden Donovan, I love Kennedy Brown, I love Alucci. And I've been Emma Cable as well. So talk about these Duke Blue Devils and why you believe this is a sleeper in March.
And then also Ashlyn Jackson as well too. Or excuse me, I mispronounced her name, but I think the thing that stands out to me is Kara Lawson. A lot of times Deion Sanders, I love Deion Sanders, I love prime time, and I'm not trying to make it about men's sports in this segment. Right. But a lot of times he gets the accolades about how he trains boys to become men. Kara Lawson, along with Dawn Staley, she's another one that trains girls how to be women and how to think for themselves and how to really see life in a full scope. When you listen, anytime Kara Lawson is talking to them, she's talking about detail. She's talking about intensity. She's talking about really taking the lessons in a losing and practicing and winning. And she's like really explaining it and put it in real life terms. So her team is very gritty. They're very ferocious. I love Tyana Mayer. I think she's an extension of Kara Lawson on the floor. Again, pushes the break. She will defend the lane. She will clog the lanes, communicates on defense. Reagan Richardson also is another motor that helps this team go. I think that scrimmage against Team USA, like, obviously you knew
that was a good one.
They was going to pull away. But they were going toe-to-toe with them, and it was just the backdoor cuts, the constant motion, creating points off defense. Like, they will really get after you. It is a shame that they're not ranked. If I'm not mistaken, they already beaten four top-ranked teams. I think, unfortunately, they lose some of the games that they shouldn't lose.
Honestly, not to cut you off, but I just randomly thought about that game against Stanford early in the season. They were going toe-to-toe with them. They were almost going to beat them.
Exactly. And it was just, unfortunately, a lucky, unlucky bounce.
Right.
So it's just or two. But, no, I agree with you. This team is loaded, and anybody can score. If you look at their stat sheet or anything of that nature, it's not just one person like that is carrying the load. There have been plenty of times where there have been spurts where somebody else has taken over the scoring load or basically had a game high. It's not one person. The ball is constantly moving. The focal point is on defense. So that is Duke. I'm very high on them. you can look at the record and kind of be like and dismiss them, but that is somebody that will be deep in the tournament, or at least Sweet 16, Elite 8.
I 100% agree. Like, if you want to talk about if you want to make an early prediction as far as a Cinderella team in this tournament, it can be the Duke Blue Devils. And I've even mentioned this before too. Like, when you play for Carol Lawson, you got to play defense. Like, that's a guarantee. And you know, and just to be able to see everybody just bought in on that end of the floor. Like, I keep talking about the NC State game, but they had a really great defensive showing in that game. Mm-hmm. It was just the constant movement. You know, it was the communication. It was the hedging. You know, it was like slowing down ball handlers. You know, taking them out of their momentum.
Right.
It was a lot of great things that they were able to do. And I'll be real, Kennedy Brown is a really underrated player on this team. I'm thinking about how she was able to really be defensively, and she made a big difference. And it's like, you know, it's just certain things that you see on the floor that don't show up in a stat sheet. And I feel like that's why Kennedy Brown is just so important on this team, is just because, you know, she just does so many things defensively that may not show up in the stat sheet, but when you watch the game, it's like, oh yeah, like right. Now we see why this team is one of the best defensive teams. Actually, they were number one in defense last year in the ACC, and they're still in that position this year. And it's crazy to think, because I mean, they lost such a big key player last year, in my opinion, is Celeste Taylor, who went to Ohio State. So
yeah,
for them to be able to come back and just have like such a great season that they have is just really incredible.
I agree. I'm just excited to see their balance in their overall roster and to see how Kara's been building it. Because at first I didn't know how much of how long they were going to give her to build that or to kind of crop out what she wants to do. But I'm glad they stuck with her, because anybody to have her would be tremendous. And her recruiting skills, she's one of the best that ever did it. Again,
definitely one of the best.
They're going to want to play for you. You're going to want to run through a wall.
Exactly. You can't knock the type of coach that Carol Lawson is. And I feel like, I mean, she may not get that respect as like one of the best coaches in the country, but you mentioned, like, you know, her and Dawn, you know, how they're able to recruit. I can even mention like a lot of other great coaches that probably don't really get the love. Coach Yo out at Ole Miss is just such a great all around coach. And then there's just so many others. I mean, of course, we're always going to know the Genos and the Tara Vanderveers and so many other great coaches in the country, but Carol Lawson's building a really good culture out there at Duke. So I know a lot of people may say that, you know, they kind of get overshadowed by the men's team, because the men's team is always going to be in contention every single year, but the women's team has been great, just tremendous ever since Carol Lawson has taken over the program, you know, about a few years back. So I'm excited for the men. So you said, would you say how far did you say that they were going to go? Like around like Sweet 16 or so?
Sweet 16, probably Elite 8.
Elite 8, okay, I like that. I think it can happen.
Me too. And to go back to Colorado, I was struggling. Aronette Von Lea.
Von Lea, yeah.
She just gets it done. Light feet, quick tap, soft touch, around the basket, catching anything 10 feet out. But to go back to Colorado, because I was just like, that dynamic duo in the post is something crazy. But yes, I'm sorry to go back. Hey, definitely Sweet 16, Elite 8 for me, for Duke.
I like that. I like that a lot. Like I said, I think that they really have a chance to really make some noise. So it's like I said earlier, like, it's crazy to think that this team has not been ranked all year long. And I'll be real. I know that the ACC has been just tremendous all around as a conference, but Duke has been able to keep themselves afloat all year. I mean, yes, they have had some bad losses, but they've also had some really good wins as well, especially against a lot of top tier contenders. Is there one particular player that's been like a standout to you? Because I know that this team is really well balanced, but has there been one player that's been like a standout, like your favorite this year?
In terms of Duke?
Yeah.
I'd probably say they're also I love them all, man.
I was saying, like, it's such a good team.
I would probably say Mayer.
Yeah. I can agree to that.
I just, you're an extension of your coach on the floor. You're diving for loose balls. You're making sure that the play, like the offensive sets, are being ran, and they don't go without her. She's the engine, definitely. She kind of sparks them up when they may be complacent for a second or two, or they may be kind of lacking the energy. I think she kind of spikes their energy. So I would probably go with that.
Kind of conflicted, man. I like Mayer. I also love Ashlyn Jackson.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't be mad at that.
Yeah, I also love Alucci because she's a dog, yeah, man. She dog. Is a dog. Like, she gets after it, man. Like, you know, it's like you mentioned, Mira going for loose balls. She'll go for loose balls. She'll take on the challenge regarding an elite offensive player. Like, she gets after it. And on top of that, she can provide some offense as well. So, this team is just so well-balanced. It is, man. Like, that's why I've been, like, really high on them throughout this season. I'll be real. After they beat Florida State by 42, like, that's when I really started to, like, just go and, like, you know, really watch them. Like, go back and watch a few of the games. Because, obviously, I can't watch every single game. But I went back and watched some games. And I was like, yeah, this team is legit. This team is really legit. They play together. There's no egos on the team whatsoever. Kara Lawson just has them like a well-oiled machine. And, you know, you can't ignore, you know, the job that she's been able to do this year for them.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And plus, they're relatively young, too. So they're the nucleus for a few more years.
Facts. No, that's a fact. So that's definitely a fact. So I'm excited to see how they are in ACC tournament, and then on top of that, moving forward to the NCAA tournament. Because, I mean, we both agree that they can definitely make some noise and make some big upsets. But let's go ahead and transition them. I want to talk about some news that took place last week. There's some new opportunities for a lot of young female basketball players, which is the overtime select. So for people who don't know, I mean, obviously you have the overtime elite, that's for the men, but now we have the overtime select, which will take place this summer. It's a 4-week league that's going to take place in Atlanta. They're going to have a regular season, a playoff, a finals, and then they're going to have a takeover weekend, which is really impressive. On top of that, they're going to have an all-star game, a queen of the court, and a three-point shooting contest. So what are your thoughts on this new overtime select league, and how do you think it's going to be beneficial for a lot of young, up-and-coming female players?
I think it's going to be very beneficial. I think it affects the pipeline from whether you're trying to get more exposure. I think it'll eliminate the – I know it's, I'm thinking long-term. I think it'll over – it provides more exposure. And then also I think it'll eliminate this whole funnel at some point where people have to go overseas because it's creating a certain stream of revenue. And it's exciting.
Definitely the NIL deals.
Definitely. So I like it. What are your thoughts particularly on that? Because it's just, I feel like sometimes I get very frustrated because it's like, I love it, but at the same time, why do we have to create all these avenues if the main infrastructure would just work correctly? But continue on, I'm sorry.
I agree. You know, it's definitely different, but I'm a fan of it. I mean, I think one thing that stood out to me whenever you were talking was exposure, because it's like there's certain players, like, you hear about them, and you may see, you know, their highlights, like, you know, they may have like a little hoop mixtape on YouTube or here and there, but you don't really have a chance to really like actually see them play. Because, like, for instance, like, you could live in New York and you could hear about a player all the way out in California. Mm-hmm. You know, you may see some highlights here and there, but you never really have a chance to really see them play. So now, you know, with overtime, because overtime has really grown a lot as a brand over the last, like, you know, possibly like almost decade or so. So for them to be able to get these young players, these opportunities. I mean, we already saw with the men and how, you know, I mean, you know, I don't really want to, you know, talk about the men in the women's episode, but you talk about how they were able to have the Thompson twins, you know, Asar and Amit Thompson, you know, how they were able to give them some exposure. Not saying that they weren't already great, not saying that they already didn't have a lot of exposure before that, but it gave them a lot more eyes to see how talented they really are. So now you're doing the same thing with women. I mean, and there's a lot of talented women that's going to be in this league. You know, you talk about Jersey Robinson, who I'm a big fan of. Malia Chavez, who I'm a fan of as well. She's a really great scorer. Jenica Lewis as well. And there's just so many other players as well. So, you know, I really love it based off the fact of it allows them to have more eyes on them, especially as, you know, as they're going through their high school career and then they're going to transition to college. But I love it from that aspect. I mean, I know that people love the traditional route, you know, obviously, you know, with the AAU and everything. And then after
get rid of AAU, please.
You said get rid of AAU. Why is it? Yes.
I just think by the time I think AAU obviously is good because, I mean, it's not the worst, but I think AAU really away from the love of the game over a certain amount of time from players because they feel as though they have to go through this AAU bracket, but now a lot of the coaches are benefiting off the backs of the players for the most part. And it's like, realistically, me and my friends, we've had this debate. You don't have to do AAU and you can still get to where you want to go.
No, that's true. That's 100% true.
But it's like, yeah, it's like, but the narrative is still, oh, you got to do AAU if you really want to get here to get there. So I think this overtime select, I think it will help pull away from AAU. Eliminated, I'm not saying it's going to drain AAU, but it will help pull away from AAU. And to be honest, there's this notion that nobody watches women's basketball, and that's not true. But the fact of the matter is the media outlets have to do a better job of promoting that. So I think this partnership that continues to grow is phenomenal because now people will be more informed with these high school all-stars before the McDonald's All-American game. You'll know those who may not actually get to the game because there's only so many roster spots. So you'll have a deeper knowledge before they actually get to college of the actual players, which over time builds into the whole brand once, you know, some of those do progress and go on to college and then the WNBA. So I love it. I'm glad it kind of pops a hole in AAU because I think AAU is just kind of, it takes away from the purity of the game. That's just me.
Yeah, I'll say that too. I mean, even just for me, because I mean, I have a little bit of AAU experience as well from whenever I played when I was in high school. So I can definitely understand mm-hmm. from that aspect. You know, it's definitely a different style and training is per se, you know, as it is like, you know, playing in high school, just, you know, just playing regular organized basketball as a whole. So, mm-hmm. and honestly, I mean, there may be some people that'll say overtime might be this kind of the same thing. Cause even like overtime elite, you know, it's not necessarily traditional basketball in a way, you know, it's all about, you right. know, fast pace and, you know, getting to the basket, you know, doing like doing crazy other things as well. So I don't know, man. I think it does. I think what it is that it's definitely going to highlight a lot of the top female players in the country, because also another thing as well is that a lot of times people don't get a chance to watch a lot of these players come together mm-hmm. unless it's the McDonald's American game, which is in March. Mm-hmm. So you only get a chance to have the opportunity once, or I mean, those are seniors at that. So, you know, a lot of times right. you don't really get to see the freshmen, the sophomores and the juniors, you know, that are on the other side of the country. You know, like, it's like I say, you know, you might see them, you might see a hoop mixtape on YouTube here and there, but yeah. you actually really get a chance to really see them like in a full game, you know, and watch how they're able to really, really play on the floor. I feel like a lot of times you're not able to get that. So now you have overtime elite. So now you have exposure, because they're going to show the games on YouTube or wherever. So you're going to have free access to it as well. So I'm a fan of it. You know, I just want to see where it goes, and I just hope that they can just continue to highlight, you know, women's players and just being able to, you know, put a spotlight on them.
I agree.
Definitely, man. But now let's talk about Athletes Unlimited, because that takes place this Thursday. I'm excited. Yes. You know, season 3 of Athletes Unlimited takes place yes. this Thursday. A lot of the rosters, the first week rosters have came out. You got Team Sims, you got Team Gray, you got Team Hall, and then you got Team Mitchell. So have you been able to take a look at these rosters? And if so, like what are you a fan of?
Give me Team Gray for 500. Tiffany Team Mitchell. Team Gray, okay. Natasha Clapp. Sad Mystics fan. Natasha had to leave us, but I understand. It's all about business. It's all about business. Sydney Clark. Yep. And they're probably about to get EDD after she, Elena Deladon, after she.
You
after
think so? Year, okay.
After this year, her taking the time to kind of evaluate, and I think she's going to go on over to Phoenix as well, too. Sydney Collison, who had an amazing finals game when called upon, when her teammates were out with Chelsea
Gray. She almost fouled out, but she played good.
Rebecca Harris. I love Team Gray. Team Sims is pretty solid. Odyssey Sims can get you a bucket. I love Lexi Brown. Hopefully safe, you know, she stays healthy. But I know that's kind of been like a issue. Seeing Tia Cooper come back.
I'm happy for her.
Yeah, because she's kind of been in and out of the league mm-hmm. league as of late. Let's see. Angel McCautry, not really in the league right now, but, you know, hopefully –
I thought she retired from basketball, but I guess she's still. I don't know if she's trying to make a comeback or I don't know. I mean, I'm happy for her. I'm all for it, but I was shocked when I saw her name.
And to be honest with you, if we're looking 2-3 seasons, correct me if I'm wrong, 3-4 seasons ago, she was on the Aces the year the last. Aces.
Yeah, her and Aces
before they won the championship the year before.
Yeah, in the bubble.
Yep, and then obviously Team Mitchell, Kelsey Mitchell, Zaia Cook. I love her. Amazing young piece for Los Angeles moving forward. But I'm going Team Harris all the way, though. Team Gray.
I like that. I'm not mad at that. I'm probably gonna have to go with Team Sims. I like the talent that they got there, man. And on top of that, they have one of my personal favorites that I love to watch, and Kalani Brown. And I've loved like the leap that she's just been able to take, especially this past year in Dallas. And now she's gonna have an opportunity to showcase her true talents now on this stage as well at AU. So I'm happy about it. I mean, Odyssey is one of my personal favorites as well. I love her veteran presence. She's played a huge role. I remember in 2022, she helped Connecticut get to the finals. And even last year playing with Dallas, you know, because she wasn't necessarily like on the full roster spot, but then she was able to, you know, come back and be that backup point guard for the team. So I'm really happy to see her. But it's also about, you know, it's also about like the player like the Taya Coopers, you know, who haven't been in the league in a few years, you know, just being able to have that opportunity to play again. And then also another player that I was a fan of in college, Taj Cole, who played at Virginia Tech. She was really good during college. So now we have a chance to see her again. And even in her first few years at AAU, you know, she was really good. So I'm just excited for a lot of these players. You know, a lot of these players that may not be on a WNBA roster, but now have an opportunity to really showcase their talent once again.
And then with this expansion team coming in the Bay Area next year, you know, hopefully the W can build back up. Obviously, I would love to have the Detroit Shock back, even though they morphed into like three other teams. But I think in the Houston Comets, like some of these sports cities,
they gotta bring them back.
You gotta bring them back. You can afford the capital. Miami,
you gotta bring back the Comets. You gotta bring back the Monarchs.
Yeah,
bring back the Shock too. Gotta bring back. I know they're in Dallas, but bring back the Shock, man.
Yeah, and it's just like, yeah. But I'm excited to see what the Bay Area. I think that's gonna be a interesting project. Not to kind of. I don't mean to pivot off, but. I just, like you said, you brought up a good point. Some of these players are outside of the league, and it's so competitive for the league. Like, and I think expansion will kind of help with that. And programs like this will help build exposure because not everybody has access to the overseas games. And this is more engaging content, and it's just more connectable and connecting, and it's more relatable.
That's a fact. You mentioned this player before, but I'm going to mention her again. Lexi Brown has finally get a chance to play again. She missed most of last year with the Sparks due to some health issues. So now she's going to be back on the floor again. And I'm super happy to see Lexi. Lexi is another one of my personal favorites. She's a sniper from three-point land. And to see her finally back on the court healthy, I mean, I'm definitely on the same boat as you. I just want her to have a healthy season, just be able to be out there and compete. And even after this AU season, I want to see her playing the W again, because she did also just sign a contract extension with the Sparks as well. So Lexi, I'm a big fan of Lexi. I've been a big fan of Lexi since even Maryland. You know, people forget she played in Maryland her first few years of college.
Before Duke, yes, she did. Yeah,
exactly. Right. So I've been a big fan of her for a while now, and to see her back on the floor again is super dope, man. So
Abby's gonna play defense.
Yeah, she's really good defensively. She's really good. I think that might be the more underrated part of her game, because you know I think the shooting kind of overshadows that, but she is really good on defense, man. So I'm definitely glad you brought that up. But yeah, I mean, Athletes Unlimited this Thursday. Make sure you tune in. It's gonna be a fun one. I'm super excited. And on top of that, it's gonna be available on the WNBA app. So make sure to be in tune for that, man. Before we get out of here, man, I want to ask you about this upcoming 2024 WNBA draft. How are you feeling about it? How do you feel about Paige opting out to stay another year? And do you possibly see any other top player, you know, possibly stay an extra year in college?
Ooh, I think it was a smart move for Paige.
I agree.
Where her injury, give it one more year. And then, you know, Gina Auriemma is going to find a way to get back into this top recruiting class euphoria, or this realm, when he lands somebody that you think Ozzie's gonna come back after her injury. So you run it back one more time, so I'm not surprised. I'm gonna say it, and if I'm wrong, I mean, because to be honest, I see Caitlin Clark coming back. I don't see her going for the draft. I think we've made it a foregone conclusion. Right. Depending on how this tournament ends, if you think kind of like a Sabrina Ionescu situation, depending on how this tournament runs or ends, it may entice her to come back. However, I do think if she gets drafted and she goes first to Indiana, the Fever, her and Leah Boston.
That's going to be crazy.
Nightmare. And ironic. ironic. You knocked me out of the tournament to win the championship. Neither here nor there. But I don't think Caitlin Clark is going to go for the WNBA draft. But I will say a team to watch out for, Atlanta Dream. Their offseason moves were so
yes.
But it flew under the radar because everybody.
No, they've elevated. I mean, you talk about getting Aerial Powers. You talk about getting Jordan Canada, Tina Charles, who was a key veteran and a former MVP. Like they may not be up there like with Vegas or New York or whoever, but they're definitely top. I'll say the top four in the W right now. I would probably say Vegas. Actually, no, probably not. Maybe top five. Like you got Vegas, you got New York. I think Seattle is going to be the third best team, and then Connecticut is still going to be in that conversation as well. So I think Atlanta's like right above them, and I do have them over Dallas this upcoming season too. And it's crazy. I love Dallas.
Right. So people are going to be upset with me and throw tomatoes at me. I actually have as constructed because I like what Phoenix did. I love the Natasha Phoenix Cloud pickup. Yeah.
And they got Kalia Copper. Can't forget that.
Kalia Copper. I love that because Natasha has the ability to play point guard
exactly.
and off guard. And to be honest, the thing that's unfortunate about it, she kind of got voluntold for that. And when I say it like that, Christy Tolliver, she comes back, she gets hurt, not the same as when they won their original championship in 19. So she kind of got forced to play the point guard, but that took a lot of energy out of her. Now that you're in Phoenix, you can run the one, and Kalia Copper can run the two. Brittany Griner can do her thing, and then you still have Diana Taurasi. You still have some other key pieces on there as well, too. Exactly. Oh, that's gonna be Seattle. I think they're missing a few pieces. I'm not sold on Seattle. Like you have Skylar, who's gonna be a dog, and she has a lot to prove. That interview was very heartwarming. Like she was kind of talking about whether or not she was gonna retire. That was very heartwarming, and I want her to come back with a vengeance, and I know she will. You have Nneka Ogumike. Obviously, she's going to do what she does. You have Jewel Lloyd, the Golden Mamba. But I don't know how that works. That looks good on paper, but I don't know how that works. And I would slightly put right now, don't judge me, but this is what I would slightly put Atlanta on top. For the simple fact, Jordan Canada is going to plug in really quickly.
No, she will. She will.
The only players that I think will struggle just a little bit is Aerial Powers. Because it was unfortunate because I thought she was a good fit in Minnesota, but you know Cheryl Reeves doesn't play. I don't know, the injury kind of took her out, and then it was kind of like a frustration with her role. I think she would fit in with Atlanta as long as she's healthy. And Tina Charles, she's just that person. She's like that friend where play 2K or Madden in like a year or two, so I'm probably not gonna be that good. And then she's just like riding the bike, like nothing happened, you didn't miss a beat. She's like that, so I think she won't have any dust. Yes, she didn't play last year, but and then you got Ryan Howard still, like it's just so many pieces to that. But
at least Gray.
Hello,
Cheyenne Parker.
Oh, she finally has some help on the front court,
yeah.
Yeah,
Atlanta's
looking
good, man.
Yeah, I have Las Vegas, New York, respectfully. I'm gonna give Phoenix the edge
at third.
Atlanta four. Yep. Okay.
So where do you have Connecticut this upcoming season?
Fifth or sixth. I don't know how many more historic runs y'all can have where y'all either in the finals or semifinals. That has to take a lot out of you. Yes, you signed, but you got DeWanna Bonner back. You have your core back. But then some players still have to, you know, injury. It's a lot to overcome, but I wouldn't, fifth or sixth.
It's not bad. Fifth. Okay. So you got Atlanta right ahead of Connecticut. That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Cause I'm thinking Jordan Canada is over underrated. In a sense, because if you look back a year or two ago, she probably was teetering outside of the league just a little bit, and then she kind of caught her. Like, I think that was a huge pickup.
Yeah, and after last year for her in LA was big. That was a really big year for her last year.
It was needed. Yep.
Yeah. I like the take on Atlanta. I've been big on them for a while now. And I think the season is going to be good. I mean, I like that you mentioned Aerial Powers, because even though, you know, there was a situation with her, Cheryl Reeve, you know, in Minnesota last year, but even in the limited minutes that Aerial Powers has, she was still able to play at a high level and still being able to score at a high level. So I think now I feel like the game will come easier to her coming into this situation in Atlanta, because she'll understand her role better. Because obviously Ryan's going to be the number one option. You know, let's go and get that out the way. Then you still got Alicia. Mm-hmm. Then you still got Jordan Canada. So you have Aerial Powers coming in that second unit and possibly being a closing lineup with them. I think that's going to be perfect for her. So Atlanta, I don't know exactly who won the offseason. I know people probably will say Seattle or Phoenix, you know, which is fair. But Atlanta had a really, really good offseason. And I feel like that's got to be talked about a lot, too.
And then people don't understand Tanisha Wright, their head coach, a huge developmental coach.
She is. She's a really good coach.
I think they're only going to get better. They were competitive. Obviously, they hit a wall in the playoffs. But that was your first playoff appearance since 18, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, since 18, yep.
So I think they're in a great spot. I may be overselling it a bit, but I'm just excited. Or maybe I'm just trying to find a way to go to Atlanta to watch a game or two.
I'll be right. I'm getting excited about the W season now. We still gotta go through March Madness and everything, man. But now this season is gonna be great. There's gonna be a lot of headlines, you know, covering the season. Can the Las Vegas Aces three-peat? What is Seattle gonna do? What is Phoenix gonna do? So it's gonna be a lot that's gonna unfold this upcoming season, man. So I'm definitely excited to watch, but. Zach, my guy, I appreciate you for coming on, man. You know, it was an honor
having me.
We definitely got to do this again, man. But definitely let the people know where to find you, where to find your work and everything.
Man, you can find me on FanSided. You can find me on Twitter, Zachary Rogers 13. Instagram, ZachyD5. Just a journalist trying to get better. And I appreciate you, Nick, for always supporting, man. I'm a big fan of your work. And, man, thank you for having me on your show, man. It means a lot.
Yeah, not a problem for sure, man. But make sure to check out everything Zach has going on. Follow the show on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. I love it. B-ball. Follow myself and Nick Andre TR. Make sure to subscribe on any platform you use, Apple, Spotify, iHeart, you name it. I appreciate you guys for listening in. And until next time, you guys, deuces.
Deuces, man.